I just want to ask you all that are watching this to please subscribe, share this podcast with people. I don't know what God has in store for all of us. So we are just trying to do our best in here and starting this ministry from zero. So leaving your thumbs up, subscribing to the channel, spreading the word would greatly help us. Let's do this. Hi friends, you've made it to Karina Faith Diaries, your new go-to spot for real talk about the journeys that shape our faith. I'm Karina, your host, and I'm super excited to chat about real-life struggles, wins, and everything in between. This is all about honest conversations, lifting each other up, and the power of a relationship with Jesus. Whether you're here to learn, connect, or to get inspired, let's get started together. My family, there's a lot of drinking in my family, so we've always been exposed to quite a bit of drinking, and so to me, it was just a normal lifestyle that you would go to a party and you would always be drinking. That's what we saw as kids our entire lives, and not trying to place shame on my parents, I think this is very common, and you know, everyday's world and today's world, but it's thinking back on some of the things that my dad would tell us, like, do what I tell you, don't do what I do. I don't know if you guys have ever, I mean, please tell me if you're on YouTube, write it down in the comments, because I've heard that my entire life, and it wasn't until I became a parent that I realized how awful the saying is. It's like we lead by example and not the other way around, and telling your kids to do something, but you do the total opposite, it's just not gonna work, right? Anyway, it was just very much like that type of vibe in my household. Like my dad was, you know, the boss, and he had the final say. A lot of name calling too, which it took me a long time to realize that he really did the best he could with what he knew at that time. Also makes me curious to understand how his childhood was. I do believe that it's a lot like what we saw our childhood being like. And I don't mean to get emotional here, but there are some names that really hurt. And I've been guilty of it too with my kids, because the way that we are brought up, whether we like it or not, or like to admit it or not, we put a lot of those same learning behaviors, you know, things that we've learned, we put a lot of that on our children too. So it's been a very long journey of unlearning certain types of behaviors for me, and still is to this day. But now as I'm going through my life here, it's just like a movie going through my face. Okay, with that being said, I, as a normal teenager, normal, I say in quote unquote, it's not normal, but we go through so much turmoil. It's really the time that we second guess ourselves, our parents, you know, beliefs, and we want to rebel and all of that. I had a lot of rebellious phases, and I did a lot of stupid things that were very much led by the drinking. I was drinking before I was 14 years old, and, you know, sometimes quite heavily. I remember my dad would call me all kinds of names if I would come home drunk, which was, you know, almost like every weekend. But there was never like a sit down talk of like, hey, let's talk about this. This is a problem. I see something here, because they were doing the same things too. So it's just kind of hard to, you know, try to preach something when you're not practicing. Like I said, no, not trying to judge or anything, but just describing things, how they were, and going through my thoughts here. Even though I was going through all of that, I never not believed in God, but I do realize now that I really didn't have a relationship with him per se. I talked to him. I've learned early on, I don't remember how, that I could just talk to God as I would talk to anyone, that I didn't have necessarily to have this like super respectful of like, Lord, my God, my this and this and that. I could just go like, you know, treat him like a father, like a loving father that he is. And so I would have conversations, but I never changed any behaviors. I didn't really think that what I was doing, not that I think it was right, but it wasn't like anything that I thought it was like wrong. Does that make sense? It wasn't anything. I just always thought that God loved me. So I always had that certainty in my heart, which I think it's so wonderful because it was very innocent. I didn't know, you know, I was living a very bad lifestyle, but I didn't feel condemned, or I didn't feel like, oh, God doesn't love me, or he will never love me. So I'm very grateful for that, because I know a lot of people have feelings of condemnation, and my heart goes out to them, because God is not out there to condemn us. He's there to convict us, and he's very gentle, has been always very gentle with me through my wildest days until the toughest times that I've, you know, the toughest things that I've gone through in my life. I've always felt his gentleness very strong in my life. So I would come home after a night of drinking and I would say my prayers at night and just go to bed. And, you know, it was that faith that was beautiful and innocent, but it did not produce any change. And so that's why I tell you that I don't think I had a relationship. I had more of like, I know you're there and you know I'm here and I know you love me, but, and that's it. That it ends right there. And it wasn't until later on with maturity and really getting to know God and having a relationship with him that I understood that having a relationship with him is completely different. We really do hear from him, and this faith does produce a lot of change in our lifestyles, behaviors, thoughts, actions. And you guys, I'm still working on a lot of those things, but I am so hyper aware of them right now when I do something stupid. So fast forward to my time here, I decided at around 22 years old that I've always wanted to come to the United States. I was a flight attendant in Brazil for a while, and I wanted to come here and learn English and go back there to, you know, to have better flights and better routes, make more money, you know, kind of grow in my career. And that was initially what I thought I would be here for, just a year. I came as an au pair, lived with an American family to learn the culture. They were Protestant also, but I don't remember them going to church a whole lot, or maybe they did and I just wasn't. Because I remember working, you know, I had like an X amount of hours, I think it was 45 hours, and I would max them out every week. So I would leave on Friday night and not return to their house until Sunday night. So I don't really know as far as their church, like church routine went, but I can tell you that I didn't hear a whole lot about it in the household until later on. 2003, I met Brian, and it was almost the end of my au pair year. And I remember he was going to have his birthday. I was going to go back to Brazil. I had a boyfriend on and off, very terrible, super toxic relationship. And my heart also goes out to people in toxic relationships, because it's so extremely hard to get out of it when you're in it. I thought I loved this man. I thought he was the man I was going to marry. And he was completely just jealous and abusive with his words, and he pushed me around a few times. At first I thought, well, he loves me, you know, that's the normal behavior, and almost like, oh, he's so jealous of me, that's kind of cute, right? Until it's not cute anymore, and it becomes something very abusive. And it wasn't until I met Brian he treated me so well. And mind you, I had broken up with this guy. We were actually engaged. And since I was going back to Brazil, in my mind, I thought, gosh, am I going to go back with him or not? Like, he would not leave me alone here. He would not let me enjoy my time in my exchange program. And so that's why I decided to break up with him, even though I thought I loved him. And getting closer to my date, my time of leaving the country and going back to Brazil, I thought we would end up getting together again. And then I met Brian, and Brian is just this like Prince Charming. He is so nice. He's just so, such a gentleman. He treated me so kindly, he would say like some of the cutest things. And I, at that point, had no idea what he was saying. I'm just like, this guy's so cute. He's so sweet. And that's kind of how it started. Like this comparison of like, gosh, I have this guy who treats me like crap and calls me names and all of this. And mind you, again, comes back to like your generational thing, you know, thinking that this is kind of like how my dad treated me. So maybe that's a normal thing, right? And not all of my boyfriends were like this at all. Like I had very nice, kind boyfriends. But this one in particular was very much like that, very macho man, you know, style. Long story short, I decided to stay. I moved in with Brian and we, you know, because of visa and all of that, I had to move in and we had to file paperwork and we ended up getting married that following year, June 2004. And then we had Bella 2005, Sophia 2006, and Antonio 2007. So back to back, we had three kids under three. It was pretty crazy, as you can imagine. Like if it sounds like it was a nightmare, it kind of was. It's like I had days that I didn't shower. I felt very lost in myself. I never really wanted to be a mom. It was not something that I aspired to do. But at that age, and when I met Brian, I'm like, you know what? I'm kind of ready. So then I really wanted to. And I knew that I didn't want to have one child. So I had, you know, Bella, and then as soon as I stopped breastfeeding, I got pregnant with Sophia, and it was great. But then I was just done because my body was so exhausted. And then we found out that I was pregnant with Antonio, and it was hard because I was just like mentally drained. We were financially drained, but obviously having that baby in my belly was just it was just a wonderful feeling that I could never think, you know, that I wouldn't have him. And now looking at my kids, I'm just so very grateful that I have all three of them, and I couldn't imagine my life without one of them. They all have such different personalities, and it's such an incredible dynamic. For me, it was hard. I had a little bit of a postpartum depression with Bella. Not a little bit, it was quite a lot. And my mom was here visiting and helping me out, and I just hated every moment of it. I could not enjoy her. I was just so scared that my baby was going to love her more than she loved me. It sounds so silly now talking about it, but gosh, it was so rough, and I had no idea why I was feeling the way that I was feeling. And I remember reading a book before having Bella and talking a little bit about postpartum depression. And I've always been a very joyful person. I never once thought that I would get hit by this. I'm just like, oh, this is not for me. Literally, I would flip through those pages and completely brush it off the subject because I never thought, you know, that it would affect me. And we just don't know. It's so hormonal, and we don't know if it's going to affect us or not. So with Bella, actually, Bella was a little bit, and Sophia was even more. Sophia was like the feelings that I thought she was going to die in her sleep, and I would be there like listening to her breathing all the time. I was so paranoid, and journaling helped me so much. I remember like writing on my journal because I read somewhere that this would help, especially during the first 6 weeks where everything kind of goes back to normal, your body is healing and all of that. And then writing there, pause to cry. And then I would cry, and then pick that back up again, and then writing more. And I would write like, today I'm feeling a little bit better. Today I'm feeling way better. And then I would read back like a week prior, and I'm like, gosh, it feels like I'm making progress here. Things are getting better. She's sleeping better and all of that. So the lack of sleep really affects me in ways that I cannot tell you. So, and I think this is something so prominent in my house that my kids, when they are struggling with something, I'm like, guys, you have no idea the power of an 8-hour sleep without interruptions and without a bunch of caffeine all day is really healing. And it took me, you know, decades to learn that, but I'm finally there. And I I love that. Okay, so then we had a little bit of a rough patch with our marriage, Brian and I. And I think it was during those years that the kids were little, I felt very lost in what I was doing. I felt jealous that he got to go out of the house. And work, and I had to stay and take care of the kids. Like I said, it's not a natural thing for me to be a mom, and I just felt like I was missing out on things. I missed being with my friends. I missed adult conversations, and I feel like at that point, my drinking really escalated. I was like drinking every day. Once he would come home, I would be would pick up the bottle of wine and go to the garage to call my mom. And so that was really rough. And obviously that affected our marriage too, which I'm so glad that he stood the test and we worked through it. But at that point, we didn't really have, like, he's been of a Lutheran faith, so very similar to Catholic, which obviously they're Protestant. But it was more of like a, I hate to use this word lukewarm, because it's not that I'm labeling the religions. It's just like how I felt the churches that we would go to. It didn't feel any, it just felt like it was a chore. It felt like I was checking a box and I was just sitting there. Okay, I'm doing my duty, God, I'm going to church. And so we didn't really have a relationship with God. However, like I told you, I kept on praying through all of the difficult times that we've had. I prayed. I've always been a prayer warrior. if I may call myself that, I would pray through things. And so I was starting to develop a relationship. I think more so, didn't really have a community to hold me accountable or anything like that. I did have my best friend, Chris, who is Catholic. One advice that I give is like, have that one friend that can know all of the ugly things about you and still love you through it, because it's so important and we need that. I mean, it's in the Bible for you to confess your sins to a person. It's important. So we had to move to Vail, Colorado eventually, 2012. And at that point, Brian had a project going on in there, and that's when we were having a rough time in our marriage. I had a full-time job working at Saks Fifth Avenue. I really loved my job. That was when I found, like, you know, I got to go to school for fashion. I kind of skipped that because the kids were little. I was actually pregnant with Antonio, and Brian, you know, supported me through school, not supported me only, but really, you know, paid for all of that, which was incredible of him. And I never got my degree. I still had like 6 months left. But at that point, the kids were growing. We were stranded for money. So he's like, we need to just, you know, take a break. And so I went to work for Saks, loved my job, but it was retail hours. And we were trying to, you know, like, I didn't really need to work, but I wanted to so badly. And I feel like I was a better person for it. However, I was, you know, working retail hours. So I was gone a lot on the weekends, and all of that. And I think that took a toll in our marriage. That's when Brian got this opportunity to go and build a house in Vail. And he said, well, I don't want to be traveling back and forth, so let's just all move there. And I really had a hard time kind of giving up my little retail job and my life in here, my friends, to just go move into a remote village, which Vail is amazing, but when it's not season, there's really not a lot going on at all, and very, very small community of people, which now I absolutely love. It was one of the best things that we've done in our lives, but going into it, I was just like, oh my gosh, what are we gonna do? Looking back, it really did save our marriage. It was a year that we really got closer as a family, as a couple. We did everything together. We were basically isolated there. We had a few friends that we would do things. I found a job in a boutique there, put the kids in school. We would go skiing every weekend with them. It was really amazing. I'm just so, so grateful that we got to do that and spend a year there. And I do feel like that really helped to really get our family together again and make me enjoy being a mom again and still have a job, you know, still have friends, but knowing where my place was. So then coming back to Indy, I one of my friends invited me to go to this church, which is still the church that I go to this day. And that was 2014. And I remember going and feeling like, wow, this is like nothing I've ever seen in my life. The presence of the Holy Spirit, it's so powerful in there. The worship, the environment, it was just like a lot of young people, which now if you go, there's a lot of people of all ages. But to me, it just really spoke to me. And at that time, I was very like a rebellious soul. And, you know, the pastor was very like, he preached a lot of conservative ideas, which to me was kind of like, wow, he's pretty conservative, but I kind of like the way that he preaches the things. And the more I got to know the Bible and, you know, learning, he preached from the Bible, which I've appreciated that so much. Never in my life had I been to a church that would preach an entire message out of context and explain all of these passages and what it means in this day, today's world, rather than just read a passage and then kind of elaborate on something else. I don't know how to explain, but that really spoke to me. And I can tell you that that produced change in my life like nothing else. Like I became so aware of so, so much that was wrong in my life. And that was the beginning of this huge change that happened to me. I started to think about it. I accepted Jesus right away and things started happening in my life for the better. I learned a lot of principles. I really wanted to be the best version of myself that I could. So I was like, wow, I just love this. I love Jesus and I love God and I'm going to be this and this and that. And then, you know, things took a turn for the worse. You think that, you know, you're now being a follower of Jesus, and our pastor likes to say that, you know, if things, bad things are happening to you, you know, you are on the right path because the devil does not want you to, you know, follow this path of Jesus. And the road is narrow, you know, and so the road to heaven is narrow, meaning we're going to go through difficult times. And learning that, knowing that, and having a community made an entire difference to what I was about to face. So 2018 comes around, I decided to quit my job and become a full-time influencer, fashion blogger, content creator, you name it. Like, we have so many names for what we do. But I had been working on my blog since 2010 with a friend, and then 2011 is when I created Karina Style Diaries. Never made a penny out of it until I actually had my first tithing, which that's a story for another time. So money started trickling in a little bit, and I'm like, you know, I left the retail job, got a job at the kids' school just to allow me time to be on the same schedule as them, and then work on the blog, you know, in the evenings and on the weekends. And that's what I kept doing for a couple of years. In 2018, I decided that I was going to quit my job as the assistant teacher and go full-time as a fashion blogger. And Brian gave me his blessing. He actually encouraged me to try, and that's what we did. I put in my notice, and then 30 days later or 3 weeks later, I found out that I had breast cancer. So that was a really tough time, and another curveball of like, gosh, it took me, you know, X amount of years to make this decision, be brave enough to quit my day job and do this full time, and now I find out that I have breast cancer. And being an entrepreneur, and so is my husband, so both business owners, it's very hard to afford insurance. So I was just thinking, am I going to be able to do this? What's going to look like? And the school was really, really nice. They kept me on their payroll until August, when we returned back to school, so I could quit then and keep my insurance for a year and a half because I needed it. And that was, you know, a saving grace too. Like, God's fingers, God's hands have been so prominent in every aspect of my life that I really can only hope that I can remember every single time, but this is one time that I can tell you that he orchestrated everything in such a beautiful way. I never really felt scared with my breast cancer diagnosis. I, at that point, 2018, I had been going to church for about 4 years and really developing my relationship with God, really developing my relationship with Jesus, and I knew they were taking care of me. So was never scared. I told the kids, hey, things are going to be okay. And mind you, guys, I'm not trying to judge anybody who is feeling scared. This is a scary diagnosis. I completely understand. This is just my story and how I was at that point. I kind of submitted and I'm like, I know that things are going to be okay. I don't know why the supernatural force came into me, but I was not scared. Then I had double mastectomy in July of 2018 and then a full reconstructive surgery in November of 2018. That year was really rough for so many reasons. I mean, I was happy because I was finally getting into the blog world. I was making money despite all the craziness of cancer. Thank God I did not have to do chemo or radiation. So I got to skip that, which was such a blessing. And that was my biggest prayer. Like, I got this, but please don't, I pray that I don't have to go through this. And God talks about specific prayers too. So I encourage you to really go and ask for specific things. I don't know if they will be done. Only God does. And if they are, either way, it's his plan, not ours. He knows better. But I encourage you to really be specific about your prayers. As silly as they sound, it's nothing is silly for God. And he knows what we need before we ask. But in the Bible, it tells us, ask and it will be given. Knock and the door will be opened. Seek and you shall find. So it is almost an order. You know, this came from Jesus. So don't be afraid to be asking and seeking and knocking. 2018, we also lost my father-in-law, and that was a really rough time for Brian. I think it was really hard for him to see his wife going through cancer, you know, and having this double mastectomy and having surgeries. You know, I had things hanging from me, like tubes and everything. Just a little bit of a change in lifestyle, not really knowing what the future held, which is still don't, but we still don't, but it's scary. And then losing my father-in-law, who had been in the hospital since July. So those 6 months were probably the hardest times in our lives until we didn't know that we would have more than that. So at that point, it was pretty hard. And then he went through a time of depression that he was just really lost and really it was very hard on him, very, very hard. And, you know, going through that, it was just so difficult for him, and just seeing him pull away a little bit, it's a serious thing and it can happen to anyone. So 2019, we kind of worked through all of those feelings of hurt and all of this that we had. It was a really great year for me financially and with the blog. Like, it really took off. I started actually working with an agency that I got accepted with. I'm still with them, so I'm so grateful for our relationship that's been so so incredible in my life and so life-changing. But also, you know, in March of 2020, we know what happens, and that threw us for a loop. So, you know, everything got better as far as like Brian's health and mental health. He was just healing so well. Things were going really, really well in the beginning of 2020. It was almost like this ecstasy of like, wow, this is, we're finally breaking it through. We're going to make it. Life is amazing. You know, the work was pouring in, just beautiful. The kids were all good and healthy-ish. But then, you know, 2020 hits and all of that we know happens. And the kids were on this school schedule that was hybrid, and it was really rough. Then again, my drinking escalated a little bit because, you know, we're home locked in. not doing anything. I was selling things from home. So that's when my business really peaked, because people who weren't buying online started buying online in 2020. So that was a great thing for my business, you know, because we work with commissions and affiliated programs and everything. So brands had all their budget to spend on that. So it was really great on that front. But we saw one of our daughters started to pull away a lot. She looked very depressed. She looked very like she didn't want anything to do with us. And, you know, I would talk to the other kids and they're like, oh, this is just a phase. It's normal. And, you know, when you hear about teenager, it's so hard because each one of them are so different than one another. You know, you want to respect them, but at the same time, you still need to be a parent. And I think that this is what I would have done different looking back at what we went through, was to just really follow through and not brush it off. Not, oh, I need space. Well, I'm sorry, you still live here. I need to know what's going on. Because we gave her space, and then she was our little angel child. I don't want to use this term either because I feel like it's very labeling, but she was one of the those kids that never gave us any trouble. And so I never in a million years thought that this would be a child that would be into drugs, you know? And so she did. She tried drugs. And I think going through what our family was going through with mom and dad, you know, just getting sick, she felt very lonely and probably scared. You know, at that time she was 14 and tried weed in school, were vaping and got hooked. And that was basically the beginning of a very long-ish, I don't want to say long because it really wasn't in the grand scope of things. It was just a couple of years of our lives that was, they were upside down. So 2021, she came and finally asked for help. And I was so grateful because I was scared because it's something that's not happening to me. But I was also grateful because she was finally surrendering to, you know, admitting that she needed help. And so we had a lot of stunts after that in the hospital. We did a lot of ER visits through the night. We did some, had some overdoses to the point in like a lot of therapy, group therapy. At that point, eventually, after a whole year of battling this, she got sent to a rehab up in Illinois that was a temporary thing. So for a month, and she ended up staying for 40 days, came back. After a week, she ran away. Toughest time of my life. I can't even go into details because it's just so, so painful. And you talk about cancer and being like, oh, isn't this the most, you know, it's so scary. Honestly, you guys, nothing compares to the pain of seeing your child go through self-destructive behaviors and there's nothing you can do about it. It's so hard. So my heart really goes out to all the moms and dads and friends of people who are going through this, because it's so difficult to watch that and still have faith, still know that God is taking care of us and helping us, but still you feel so helpless, because when something is happening to you, it's, you kind of have control over it, of like how, at least how you will behave or how you will take in that, you know, diagnosis or the news and how you're going to, what you're going to do with this. But when is your baby? And then you start thinking, what have I done? Like, and there's so much guilt that goes into it. It's like, you know, we think that it's our fault. It's, we can't help but think that. And there's just so much that plays into it. But I'm going to read this quote again, because I just read this on a podcast. I can't even remember who was here, but it's something that really stood out for me. I know I've talked a lot about John Maxwell, so please don't kill me, but I got to attend a dinner that he was a part of it, or he was speaking, and he said something that I had to write it down because it's so life-changing. It says, when there's a need or a problem and it is sensed by a few, that each individual understands their responsibility and give their all regardless of the odds, only that does Jesus works a miracle. Let's just take a pause and absorb this. I am so glad that deep inside I knew that I had to do something too. Yes, praying, get on my knees, pray to God, but I also needed to go in there and find out and be the tough mom. It's so hard to be. It's so much easier to be a joyful, fun mom, right? It's the hard thing is to say no. It's so, so hard. And that's what they need. I hate to say this because it sounds so not fun, but it is what kids need. They are going to test our boundaries so much, but they need boundaries. And I see nowadays kids being ran by like, oh, the love theory or whatnot. They still need boundaries. That doesn't mean that you're not respecting your kid. Much to the opposite. They need to know how far they can go. That's you teaching them the tough things in life. Because if you don't, they're going to go bounce off the walls somewhere else. And life is going to teach them the hard way. And so one thing that we learn in this like long, you know, year or so of rehab visits was in therapy was easy hard or hard easy. So it can be, if it's easy right now, it will be hard later. So if you don't deal with it right now, it will for sure come back to bite you. But right now it's hard, but it will pay off later. So it will be easier eventually, meaning put boundaries, set boundaries to your kids, do the work, do the difficult things, say no, be the annoying parents, you know, like at the end, you guys, it definitely pays off. So I don't want to touch a lot on that because it's such a private thing for her. It's her story to tell. But it was really, really tough. Like at the end, she had like 4 overdoses back to back. And I said, if we brought her home, she would die, basically. We met a great therapist at that time. She had a good relationship with, but she was in such a bad mental health at that time that she couldn't even get out of it. It was just this vicious cycle. And the therapist, so she started running away eventually in this place. And, you know, bad friends, like there was a lot of things that came together. And in that week that she started running away, I was praying and I was doing a fasting and I can't remember what it was, but I just remember just being in such a fervorous prayer time and just really asking God to like move. And she started running away. And thank God, because Utah is in the west, like sort of west coast mountain time, I can't even remember. They are in a total different time zone. So I wouldn't see the emails. They would try to call, but I have my non-disturb. So they would send an email saying Sophia ran away. And then after a few hours, we found her. And I would see that in the morning. So thank God that I didn't see that at that time. She ran away because obviously we would be so worried. And this happened 3 different days that week. And I was just having these conversations with God that I'm like, I don't understand. I am here praying. I am here doing this fast. Good things are supposed to be coming out of this. Like, what is going on? Just having these internal battles and these questionings. And I think, you guys, that it's okay for us to ask Him because us in our limited mind, we have no idea. We really don't understand the reasoning behind things, but we just trusting Him, I think it's all we can do. Keep on praying and trusting because looking back, that had to happen in order for what was coming to happen. So she basically got kicked out of this program, but we had a deposit that was a lot of money. And if we chose to pull her from the program, we would lose the deposit. And that was a year-long program. But if she got kicked out, we would get our deposit back, which, thank God, we got it. But she, the therapist said, we're making a recommendation for her to go to the wilderness program, which if you have ever heard of that, it's probably the parents' and the child's nightmare. Most scary nightmare because we hear so many awful things about it and we did not want to send her to the wilderness. We hesitated so much. It was such a tough choice. And at that time we were working with a educational consultant, which there's a lot of people who do that kind of work. They would you know, learn about your teen's story, and that they would make, they would advise you in placements that would be suitable for them based off their personalities or their troubles or whatnot, you know. So he said, I know it sounds really scary, and I know there's a lot of bad rap online, but I really highly recommend you sending her, because it can be very life-changing. There's a lot of positive stories that come out of it. And we were basically out of choices. It was either that or send her to a lockdown facility, which we did not want to. So, you know, I talked to my sister, who had been through the, you know, drug addiction journey, and she said she is too comfortable in this boarding school. She needs to feel it in her core. You need to rock her world. And I never forgot that. I'm like, you know what? She's always been very outdoorsy. She loves the outdoors. So, okay, we're gonna do it. So talk to Brian. We decided, okay. So it was really tough. She got transported there from Utah to Colorado. And it was like in the winter time. So this was end of October. So November, December, and she came back. She finished in January. So she was there through the winter. And you guys, crazy. It's crazy. One day I really hope and pray that she would come here and share with you her journey there, because it was probably one of the hardest things that she's ever done. And it was very life-changing. Like, she learned so much to take care of herself, build fire. She would sleep outside in the snow. I mean, it sounds so rough and everything, but it really brings these kids back to life. It just gives them a sense of purpose. They are there as a group. Everybody has a role, almost like the body of Christ. You know, everybody has a role. Everybody has a gift. She was the fire maker. She would make fire, like, you know, in an instant, and other girls couldn't. So there's like everybody played a role in this survival situation, and they would hike for like miles, you know, 10, 12 miles a day with a 50-pound backpack on their backs. It really roughened them up in the best possible way. You know, they had to boil water once a week to showers, that kind of stuff. It was very, very cool. And as predicted, when she went, she hated our guts. We could not talk to her for many, many weeks until we started getting phone calls. But she wrote a lot of letters, and the letters started to progress as like from hateful to I'm okay, to like I'm actually kind of liking this, to laughing and telling us about the other girls and some situations, to finally missing us. We got to do the parent quest or family quest when we spent, I think it was two nights in there. They were the hardest nights that I've ever spent in my life. We actually slept in a tiki, but it was not heated. We just had a little roof under our heads, you know, in this like sleeping bag. But we got to experience a little bit of what was like. When she got released from there, she stayed for, I believe, 14 weeks, which is a little more than the usual. I remember they made the recommendation of her going back to the boarding school setting, and I could not. I knew in my heart that I needed to give her another chance, and that came from a lot of praying and a lot of just talking in therapy and all of this, and talking to her therapist too. We developed this contract that she had to follow in order to stay home, and I felt like I owe it to her, because she had been at that point 9 months away, and to us too, because it was a lot of, you know, not just the financial burden that it was, but also being away from, you know, our daughter. And it was right before she had one more year before she turned 18. And I was very clear of like, if you don't pass the sobriety test, you will go back. So she knew we were serious at that point, because we had been following through all of that. So I think that was important too, because it really held her accountable for not trying drugs again, and then also changing her entire life. So not going back to the same school, not being able to have certain friends, you know, relationships, just changed a lot of things. She ended up going to the church school, and in the beginning she hated it, because she, at that point, she was not a believer. She thought that this is like, I'm tired of pretending and this and that, like lots of complaints. And she finally met a boy who's she's been dating ever since. And, you know, a guy who knows Jesus and introduced it to her in the most kid-like way. And in the beginning, it was hard for her because she felt like she probably couldn't relate to a lot of them. And then she found out that they really embraced her the way that she was. And that was so beautiful. We had Jera here the other day, and she talked about how she would go to church, you know, and she would be like drunk or hungover and smelling like weed, and she never felt judged. I'm not saying that people don't judge. I'm sure there's plenty of judgmental people out there, but the vast majority do not. They had compassion, and I felt the same way, like with my daughter. She was taken in, and people really embraced, you know, and I'm so forever grateful for that. It really changed her life and changed mine. So later on that year, in the year, she got baptized, and nowadays she is a Jesus follower. She loves her Bible. She has small groups. She still struggles with teenager things like all my kids do. We all do and forever will. We all have our little things. But to see someone walk through that really rough journey and come out of it in just a couple of years, I 100% believe that the spiritual component was all the difference. And I will go even further. I do believe that Jesus was the ingredient that was missing, that needed for that change. And once he was in the picture and he was welcomed, her life literally took a 180, and she is the girl that she was before all of this craziness happened. So that was another way that God showed up in my life that I will forever be grateful. It taught us so much. And here's the thing. I do think that there's a purpose for everything. Do I think that that's God wanted for this to happen? I really don't think. But will he allow tough things to happen? Yes, he will, because there are things that we can learn from it. There's consequences for our actions. So consequences for the way that we parented before, consequences for her choices, the choices that she made. So he's not going to free us from the consequences, but he will walk with us through them. And that's how I felt with my life. Ever since my crazy teenager years, through tough times in marriage, through cancer, through tough times in motherhood, he's always been there, always. And that's what I want to leave you with today. If you guys have a lot of like more questions on the cancer, which, you know, I didn't even touch on that. I found out this year. Maybe I'll just end with this. Sophia's doing amazing. She's great. This was 2023. And so around March, funny thing, I had my 5-year appointment from my breast cancer, and I was finally free and good to go, did not have to keep on coming back for the annual appointments. And then three weeks later, I started having this hip pain, and it just kind of kept on lingering, and I'm like, what's happening? And come to find out that the cancer had spread, and it's now a stage 4 in my bones. And the reason why it's called stage 4 is because it got out of the original source, which was my breast. I have no breast tissue anymore. So somehow it got into my blood system or whatnot, and it got into the bones. So we are treating it. I did have to have radiation in July, but I feel great. I feel really, really good. In July of last year, I feel like, yeah, not this year. Everything is good, is going amazing. I am doing immunotherapy. We have insurance, and it covers all those very, very expensive drugs that I am taking. I have a great doctor that we have a great relationship with. I have great friends. I have a great family. I have my, you know, studio, my job that I love doing, as, you know, still working as a fashion blogger. But this year, one of my goals was to have a podcast that I could come on and talk about Jesus and share people's stories of encouragement, of inspiring others, because I got so encouraged through these stories when I was going through cancer and through my daughter's addiction journey. And now, you know, the second round of cancer, which is basically incurable because it got out. We don't know where else it could go. So it will probably be a forever treatment, which I'm fine with. Like I said, this was never something that I was scared of. But it is one more thing that I had to deal with. And that goes to say, I've gave my life to God, and I know He will do, He will accomplish His will. That's all I can ask for. And I'm grateful that He's letting me have this podcast, because I feel like, if nothing else, it is a legacy that I'm leaving for my family, and that I would love for them to continue this project once I'm not here anymore. And not to sound morbid, because I'm planning on staying around here for a long time, in case you're wondering. And I do believe in healing. I believe in that God can heal me at any given moment, but I also submit to His will. And so with that said, I will be here for as long as He wants me here for, like you are too. So that just takes this burden out of my shoulders too, of like, you know, guessing of like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling well, or I'm not feeling well, or I'm sick, or I have a diagnosis. No, I'm living my life. All I pray for is for my kids to be saved. This was my prayer all along. I pray that they give their lives to Jesus, because I think that's the single most important thing that we can ever do in this life. Something that I've learned in my church, and I thought, what a great way of putting this, is this. If Jesus is fake, if He does not exist, right, then I lived my life like a fool, right? So I can see this, like this, it's foolish to think he exists and pray to Him when He doesn't exist. So if at the end of the day He doesn't exist, then I just lived my life as a fool person. If He does exist, however, then that makes all the difference, right? Because I know where I'm going. So I want to end the season again full of gratitude for you being here. I pray that God will enlarge our borders and will let more people be able to see this. But again, His will be done in here. If you feel led to, please share and like this episode, give us a review on the Apple Podcast or Spotify, share with your friends. That is so much more than you can possibly know. And that's it for today. Until next season, thank you for being here. I love you guys, and I wish you a wonderful 2025. Until next year, I'll see you then. Un beijo. Ciao, ciao. Thank you so much for joining us today, friends. I hope you guys are walking away feeling encouraged and maybe even a little lighter. Make sure to subscribe and drop a comment or review so we can keep this faith-filled community growing. Share this episode if it touched you, or if you know someone who needs to hear it. Let's spread the love. I'll see you next week on Karina Faith Diaries. And until then, stay strong, stay kind, and keep the faith.